Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Another Behind the Bets podcast. We are taping this on Wednesday, October 17th. Such a busy time of year. Baseball playoffs, Dodgers win in 13 innings. Some controversy surrounding Manny Machado. We'll talk about baseball betting with John Murray of the Westgate. We'll also discuss the NBA, which is now underway, and also the college football card. So we'll get some sharp plays from the other side of the counter when John joins us. And also Phil Steele is going to join us after another strong week here on the pod. So we'll get his five plays for this coming week, and we'll discuss the three ranked matchups as well. We're going to have some fun with Phil and John coming up. Also, we had some fun last week with Brian Windhorst and Preston Johnson, professional bettor from Vegas, who contributes a lot on ESPN.com. We did a NBA season win totals draft, so go check that out. Still a lot of opportunities to play there, and also just good NBA chatter. The season kind of snuck up on all of us, so go check that out. And one reminder, Brian does a great job on another podcast, the Hoop Collective, so make sure you download that as well if you are an NBA fan, because some great content there and some great content coming up straight ahead here on the Behind the Bets podcast.
Stop. Hammer time.
It was definitely hammer time last week with Phil Steele, so let's bring him back. Phil, how are you, buddy?
I am doing great, Mr. 2-1. How about yourself?
I know. It's without fail. Although I was very wise. We talked about it, or I alluded to it last week. You want to move one of the games late at night. So if you're 1-1, you know it's a winner. If you're 2-0, then you know it's definitely a loser. And that was what I did with Michigan. Something we started that thought process on my end. So I really appreciate you on that, because you got me at least going in that direction. And then I started kicking the tires on that.
Nice. Yeah. And that Michigan game, I tell you what, they pretty much dominated. And if you look at Michigan, they sure look like one of the best teams in the country, one of the most complete teams.
And it was really a fade on Wisconsin. Look, they're now 1-5 against the number this year are the Badgers. And the only time they covered was that fluke cover against Iowa. And it's a different situation. This is the first time they were underdogs all season, and getting more than a touchdown is enticing. And just like you and I discussed on the podcast, it was like at first thought, it's like, give me all those points. And then you break it down. This defense is just not the same as we've seen in years past with Whiskey. And you know, you want to take that dog, but as soon as they go down 7-0 or whatever it may be, you're like, wait a second, what am I doing here in this atmosphere, the big house on a Saturday night, national television?
Yeah, and, you know, like you mentioned, 4.4 yards per carry they're giving up on the year, banged up secondary. And it wasn't really a fluke cover against Iowa. It was a misleading final score. But Wisconsin did get the cover on the game-winning touchdown. They just added an extra touchdown onto it late to make it appear like a blowout game, which it was not.
That's right. They were laying 3.5, I believe.
Right.
So good stuff on your end last week. Obviously, the other extra game we touched on was Georgia-LSU, and hey, Tigers plus 7.5 was never in doubt.
Yeah, pretty much dominated the line of scrimmage, and you have to be impressed with LSU. We'll see. Now, you know, the one thing about LSU this year, Doug, they are 3-0 as an underdog and 1-3 as a favorite. So the only time they've covered was against Ole Miss. We'll have to see how they do now that they're back in that favorites role like they were against Florida.
So I want to go back. You really nailed the handicap with Duke plus 3, how prepared they were for that offense they faced, and really, really nailed that. How often do you focus on that when it's such a unique offense?
A lot. To me, that's really the key. And, you know, you go back to the 2 weeks prior when Georgia Tech played Bowling Green. I was all over Georgia Tech laying big points to Bowling Green. And you're thinking, really? Georgia Tech's not doing much. But Bowling Green never faced that option, and Bowling Green's weakness was rush defense. So the option is a unique animal, and I do treat those games separate from most other games. I like how defenses prepare for them, and you got to know whether a defense is prepared, has extra week to prepare, or if it's the first time seeing the option, then you know you're going to struggle with it.
Well, it got there, and it was a strong handicap from North Carolina as well, diving deeper than just the box scores, knowing that this team that played last weekend was so much different than the one earlier in the season. And, you know, we broke down the thought process of going first half, first game. It didn't really matter with Illinois, but I wonder moving forward if we're going to have some other ones.
Yeah, really not looking at any first halves in this week's one, but pretty much just five side plays here.
All right, let's get to it, because the first of the five games I want to discuss is a game that I know a lot of sharps have been on all week. It opened 8.5, moved to 9.5, and that's Missouri. Why Missouri in this spot?
Well, here's the main thing, and it's something I touched base with you last week when we were discussing the over in the Missouri-Alabama game. And I said, Drew Lock, yeah, against Power 5 bowl teams has a ratio of, and I'm, I think it was 19 and 24 heading into the week. It's now 20 and 26. 20 touchdowns, 26 interceptions if they're playing a Power 5 bowl team. Now, if they're playing anybody else, a Power 5 losing team or a Group of 5 team or an FCS team, it's amazing, Doug. 60 touchdown passes, 9 interceptions. And last time I checked, Memphis comes in. Now, that's not the only reason, naturally, but it's a pretty good reason, because when you watch Drew Lock, I mean, I think the last 3 weeks against quality SEC teams, 1 touchdown, 5 interceptions, he is anxious to get a big game going here. Now, let's take a look where Memphis is coming in. Memphis just had their Super Bowl. They played UCF last week. Yeah, they've got 2 losses on the year, but a win over UCF, you're back in the race in the AAC, and it was Memphis's game. They led 30-17 at the half. They led into the fourth quarter. They were up the entire game against UCF. UCF gets a touchdown in the fourth quarter, comes back and beats them by a point. So you just played your Super Bowl all out, A-plus effort, should have beaten UCF. Now you got to go on the road and play a non-conference game. I think they're in a flat spot here, coming off a super effort last week. And Missouri's coming in off 3 straight losses. So, you know, you got Missouri at home, Memphis off that, and Drew Lock is taking on the type of defense that he likes to take on here. I like Missouri laying the 9.5 in that one.
Certainly a strong handicap. What about, and I've seen it in the past, haven't tracked it this particular season, but facing Alabama the week after when your team theoretically is beat up. I know we've seen that in when Alabama has a more competitive opponent, whether it's be Georgia or Auburn. You want that cupcake afterwards. Some of the names I'm blanking on, but some of the cupcakes we've all seen Bama and Georgia play the week after the Iron Bowl, right, or Bama LSU. What about just the fact that Missouri just played Bama?
Two differences here. The first one is, I don't think Missouri was all fired up thinking they were going to beat Alabama like you would in what you mentioned, a competitive game, LSU at home at night, Death Valley. Second is, I don't know if this Alabama team is as physical as the ones that used to be 2-3 years ago. Remember, they used to just pound you with their football, running it on you all game long. And that defense is just downright nasty. Well, their defense, I don't think, is up to that level. And offensively, they're throwing the football over the yard. They're not pounding on you every play after play after play. It's Tua making big plays. So in this case, I don't think the post-Bama factor has any effect.
No, that's a great point. Trevor Maddich, who I used to co-host on Saturdays with on radio, called it like the Anaconda, where they would just suffocate you by the third quarter. You think you're in the game, and all of a sudden you're down 2 scores and realize you're not getting 2 more scores the rest of the game.
Trevor's a hell of a football mind.
Yeah, isn't he? He always has a nice analogy, and Brad touched on it, is that Georgia's sort of that new Bama, limited offense, suffocating defense. Obviously didn't materialize last week to LSU, but that's a great point, because this Bama team is young and does not have that imposing physical presence that we've seen Bama teams in the past. Well, another team that a lot of sharps were on was USC last week. Got a little hairy at the end against Colorado, but they did get the cover and give the Buffaloes their first loss of the season. Now USC on the road, and you like them, +6.5 at Rice-Eccles, which historically is a very tough place to play.
Yeah, and let me give you the reasons on this one. Now, first of all, my computer does have Utah winning this thing by like 7-10, and here's the reason why. Utah's off 2 big blowout wins. They blew out Stanford. They blew out Arizona. And USC on the road this year went into Stanford and at Texas and lost by a combined 54-17. They weren't even close, right? So you add all those factors together, and the fact that the underdog's done well in this series, Utah's done well in this series against the spread, And that's why Utah is a 6.5, almost 7-point favorite in the game. Now, here's why I'm going to poke a lot of holes in what I just said. You look at the last two games for Utah. They played Stanford without Bryce Love, which is a big difference. And Stanford in that game actually had the first down edge, 26-22, and the yardage edge. Utah tacked on a couple of scores late to turn it into a 40-21 blowout. I don't think they were as dominant as the score would indicate. And remember, they were an underdog for that game. And then last week against Arizona, Khalil Tate, and remember, Arizona the previous week had got outgained by Cal 2-1, and we saw as well how good Cal was last week. Arizona lost Khalil Tate in the first quarter, so they're playing a Khalil Tate-less, not very good Arizona team, and blow them out big. That's okay. Prior to that, they had lost to Washington State by 4, lost to Washington at home by 14. Now, let's go back and look at those two losses for USC earlier in the year on the road. It was JT Daniels' first and second road starts against two pretty good defenses, Stanford and Texas, and he struggled. But they weren't blown away in those games. In fact, they were only out first down by two first downs, 38-36 in the two games combined, only outgained by 40 yards per game. Turnovers did them in, and that's to be expected when you have a freshman, true freshman quarterback making his first two road starts. Well, now he's a veteran. And you look at the last two games. They jumped out to a 24-0 lead against Arizona. They were up huge against Colorado and sort of let up. Well, now USC's not the big favorite in this series. And if you go back and look at this series, the only eight meetings recently between the two, USC is 5-3, and Utah's wins have been by 4, 3, and 3 points. Let's face it, Kyle Whittingham is going to be happy with a 1-point victory here. And I rate the offenses, breaking them down, dead even. I rate the defenses, dead even. Slight edge maybe almost to USC. And special teams, believe it or not, where Utah normally has a large advantage, dead even. So I got dead even, dead even, dead even. Utah is at home at Rice-Eccles where they're tough, but USC's got the added motivation of being an underdog. I'm taking the big points here, 6.5 points with USC. I think it's decided by a field goal one way or the other. It wouldn't surprise me if USC in this role underdog comes out on top.
Well, Clay Helton's been a disaster against the point spread, especially since the beginning of last year, but back-to-back covers as favorites, so let's see if he can keep that train going. I mentioned – go ahead.
I think I also think a lot of Clay Helton's struggles against the spread have been being favored by too much and winning games but not winning them by enough. And he doesn't have to worry about that here. He's a 6.5-point dog.
I think he's struggled as an underdog as well. I'm actually Googling it right now because I took Stanford earlier this season in one of my picks in my column. And it's actually up right now, so we're already there. All right.
Home dog 0-0 last year, away dog 1-3 last year, or last 2 years. So
it's more that USC's brand. So USC, since Pete Carroll left in 2009, 8-16 as an underdog, 11-24 against ranked teams. Is Utah ranked?
I believe Utah is ranked.
Right. So that's all. It's more like the brand that is USC, right?
Right. This is a very un-USC type of line, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is. You're right, because they're usually road favorites and things like that. But you mentioned it. And by the way, Utah's not ranked. They're receiving votes, but they're not ranked. So anyway, gotcha. I just wanted to throw those stats in there because we've talked about it in the past on the pod. So something we also talked about was last week, North Carolina. How you figured out they were, or you determined they were sort of kind of getting their stuff together. But here they are on the road, and you like them again at Syracuse, which is laying more than a touchdown. This is a different Syracuse team than we've seen in years past.
Yeah, it sure is. And if you saw Syracuse at home against Florida State, they were highly motivated as an underdog, and they didn't just want to win that game. They wanted to punish Florida State, and that they did, 30-7. I used them as the big underdog against Clemson and really enjoyed that game because it was very comfortable. You're up in the second half getting over 3 touchdowns in the game. You really didn't have to worry. Plus, Clemson lost their starting quarterback in the second quarter. As it was, Clemson had a rally, pulled out the win. I was disappointed with their effort against Pitt, but overall, this is a much better Syracuse team. Eric Dungy, if you haven't watched Syracuse closely, he's a guy that can hurt you with his legs and hurt you with his arm. An outstanding 10-4 ratio, 5.6 yards per carry. It's a good Syracuse team. But let's go back to last week's North Carolina-Virginia Tech game. And that's going to continue to give his value the rest of the season. Watch the game. North Carolina, clearly the superior team. They had 522 yards and 375. At the end of the game, despite shooting themselves in the foot about 10 times during the game, missed field goals. I mean, at the half, they had a 262-118 yard edge. They had four drives deep in Virginia Tech territory. Virginia Tech had one drive into their territory, and it was only 9-7. Still, at the end of the game, they're up by two. They have a first and goal at the 1 yard line. There's only a couple minutes left in the game. They're about to put it away. Hands off the running back. Ball pops in the air. Virginia Tech recovers, drives the length of the field, and pulls out the win, 22-19. But North Carolina did everything but win the game. They lost their starting quarterback, Cade Fortin, injury in that one. I don't know if Fortin's going to play, but Nathan Elliott did good enough in his place. I like the way Antonio Williams running the football for him. And as I pointed out on last week's podcast, this is not the start of the season, North Carolina, when they were missing 13 suspended players. They've got everybody back, and now they're 1-4. They absolutely need to win. I like what their offense is doing. They average 5.2 yards per carry. Defensively, they are holding opponents to 18 yards below their season average. Syracuse, meanwhile, giving opponents 12 yards above their season average. North Carolina's played a pretty tough schedule. Miami and Virginia Tech in back-to-back weeks, and both games misleading. In fact, you know, once again, they've got about 200-yard or 125-yard edge in the two games combined, yet they end up losing them both. So you still have a very underrated North Carolina getting over a touchdown on the road, and Syracuse has been living on that underdog mentality for years. Remember all their big upsets they've been pulling at home and the games they take close? It's in the underdog mentality, but now they're not the underdog. They're the favorite here, and I'm going to take North Carolina plus the big points again.
Can't fault you there. That is blasphemy for people around these walls, Phil. I mean, come on, this is full of Syracuse people around here. There's a lot of buzz with the Orange doing so well. One thing I did want to bring up, because one of my colleagues did mention this, he's actually traveling up to the game, Pete Giancini, who oversees podcasts here at ESPN. He mentioned that this team is built for the dome, and they've struggled, obviously, at Pitt in that sloppy weather. What do you make of that? It not just it's a road game for North Carolina, but you know, there's a reason Syracuse plays so well at home, because of just the environment and that it's built that way or constructed that way.
I do think they are a lot tougher at home, and you make them a home dog, and I mean, they beat Clemson last year in a big upset. That was outstanding. Later in the year, they played Wake Forest at home. I actually had Syracuse in that game. I was laying about 7. We were up at the half, and Wake Forest just came back and beat them 64-43. And later in the year at home against Boston College, they lost by 28. You know, one of the advantages they have in the dome in September is the fact that thing's not air-conditioned. And it's actually hotter in the dome than it probably is outside. But now it's very cool weather in Syracuse, so I don't think North Carolina's going to have to deal with heat in this one.
All right, so you mentioned Syracuse. Now to Temple, which is hosting a ranked Cincinnati squad, and the Owls. This is a big thing in college basketball. When you have a unranked team laying points to a ranked team, it's like, you know, without fail, just back the unranked team laying points. I don't know if it holds true in football in terms of the ATS record over the years, but it's certainly a good sign here.
Yeah, and the other thing I really like about the game is Cincinnati was not ranked in their past game. This is the first time they've been ranked all year, first time in years they've been ranked. And I can't tell you how many times I'm going through the recaps of the games, which I do every Sunday night, Monday morning, and the writer will say, oh, they were ranked for the first time ever, but now they lost. And now they lost. Now they lost. Happens all the time. I think it's happened 3-4 times this year. So you have a Cincinnati team that got to 6-0. Their best game of the season was Tulane. Beating Tulane like they did, handle them easily. Their defense is doing extremely well, and the opponent's 103 yards below their season average. But you go through the rest of their games. They played UCLA in the first game of the new coaching staff with drastic changes. Miami was a game played in a downpour. They actually, it's more like a 7-0 game. It turned into 21-0 because of the weather. They only had 223 yards. They beat Alabama A&M. The Ohio game, Ohio U actually completely outplayed them in the first half at a 236 131-yard edge and led 24-7. Since he rebounded, came back to win late, and then everybody beats Connecticut 49-7. And the one thing I'm looking at with Cincy this year, though, is they're in some rarefied air. 6-0, and you know everybody's been patting them on the back for the last 2 weeks, and they're off a bye, and now they're going to play Temple. And if you follow Temple last year, you know, I thought Jeff Collins got off to a horrific start last year. They were losing games as favorites. They were barely getting past Villanova, barely got past UMass. They were 2-3, and the season seemed headed for doom. Actually, they were 3-5 last year. Then all of a sudden, they won 5 of their last 6 games. Well, this year, they lost to Villanova and Buffalo at home, both as favorites. How do you do that? But since then, they absolutely dominated Maryland on the road. They beat Tulsa by 14. I thought they played a very good game against Boston College. BC got a late touchdown to make that a 10-point game. They crushed East Carolina. And even last week against Navy, they had a 409-284-yard edge. I love the defense. They're at home. They're a team that's is peaking. They're getting better and better by the week. Each week they're getting a better average game grade. And I just think the pressure, the 6-0, and the unusual situation for Cincinnati will affect them here. And I think Temple's a better football team. So you got the better football team at home laying 3.5, or 3, actually, in this one. I'm taking the Temple Owls -3 over Cincy.
I will say this. The Bearcats have been a covering machine. 5-1 against the spread. You mentioned the Ohio game. That was the one time they did not cover. They were laying a touchdown and only won by 4. But this has been a team that has really rewarded backers, not just as underdogs, which was early in the season. You mentioned UCLA. But they're covering as chalk here. And this is an interesting one, though, because they are back to being a dog despite being undefeated this season.
Yeah, and being, like I said, being ranked for the first time was something that really made me perk up.
All right, sounds good. I like that. Let's wrap it up in the SEC, a conference I have struggled with despite my Bama first half backing. Auburn against Ole Miss. So take me through this game.
Well, Auburn's pitiful, right? They just lost to Tennessee.
Their offense certainly is.
Yeah, I'm telling you, they can't even run the football worth anything, and it's really affecting them. And you go back to last year, Doug, when they had just beaten Georgia and Alabama. Then they lost Kerryon Johnson to injury. Georgia, they averaged 3.7 yards per carry and lost. UCF, they averaged 2 yards per carry and lost. And every FBS game this year, with the exception of Mississippi State, they've averaged below 4 yards per carry and pretty much have struggled. Now, they did manage to beat Washington and Arkansas and Southern Miss, but have struggled the last 2 weeks, losing to Mississippi State and Tennessee. However, they did have a 52-yard edge last week. They gave up a fumble return for a touchdown in the third quarter, although they did score a late TD, so that probably had something to do with the edge. But they're taking on an Ole Miss defense here, which just struggles against
everything. It's atrocious. It is so bad.
Yeah, Ole Miss has given up, in SEC play, 263 yards per game on the ground, 5.5 yards per carry. And if Auburn's going to be successful on offense, they need to run the ball. Now, if this game was played 3 weeks ago, Doug, when Auburn was in the top 10 and Mississippi State was coming off that 45-16 beatdown by LSU, spreads what? Auburn -17? It would have been huge. And here Auburn is laying 3.5 in this game on the road in a must-win situation, catching a lot of heat. They're just 4-3. It's an early game. I don't think the crowd's going to be overly intimidating for them. And I do think they get the run game going. If they get the run game going, I think they play a lot better. And there's no doubt we have a far better defense with Auburn. They're only giving up 334 yards per game this year, 3.4 yards per carry and 53% completions, holding their opponents to 61 yards below their season average. You've got a vastly better defense, an offense that should be able to do what they need to do to win, and it's almost like a pick'em situation at 3.5. I think Auburn goes in there and gets the win gets it by a touchdown or more. If you watched last week's Mississippi-Arkansas game, I just forgot to mention that. Arkansas is up by 2 scores most of the game. It was one of those things where at the very end, Arkansas is without their quarterback, without their top 2 running backs, and Ole Miss was able to rally for the win. But Arkansas probably should have beat them by a couple of scores last week.
You know, it's interesting. I always get fascinated by these, sort of situations where one team is horrific on defense, the other team's horrific on offense. So who's going to give on that game? So I'm excited to watch this game just because I had a Ole Miss over early this season. They didn't get there. It was against Kent State. But, Kent, it was one of those games where Kent State had a first and goal and ended up punting. Just strange how Kent State moved the ball without being very prolific on offense. Now, Ole Miss can get stuff done, but
how about
offense,
that Ole Miss-Alabama over?
Oh,
I was on that as well. It was 56 at the half. 56 at the half of the total 70.
I had that as that's how I went 2-1 that weekend. That was
and you were celebrating a win, weren't you?
Well, it's funny on SportsCenter. Excuse me, I had a loser. That was my column pick. I think I went 1-2 in college that week because of that stupid game. But on SportsCenter, I gave out the Bama team total over, which got there by halftime. But that one does smart because that's when I realized that's the weekend, honestly, when I realized Bama first half was a gravy train and much wiser. Just seeing how how they brought in the oars, how elementary Bama went on offense. That's when it
and
really hit the light
bulb. And
could you
believe how Ole Miss was taking the full 45 seconds between plays? They just wanted to get out of there. They weren't even trying to score.
I wonder if there was a sign between coaches to say, hey, we're waving the white flag here.
Yeah, and it was clear what Ole Miss was doing, and I think that had Saban back off as well. Because, I mean, if Ole Miss even attempted to score, you got to feel they would have been able to. And that thing came up, what, 1 point short of the total?
I think, yeah, depending, like 1.5 or something like that.
Yeah.
It was painful. It was painful because Bama obviously just lit it up. But that defense shut him down after giving up a touchdown the first drive.
First play.
Yeah, the 1 play strike after the kickoff. Let's talk more about Bama because – where do you stand on Tua playing this weekend? How do you handicap this game at Tennessee? And get, I mean, Bama's, you know, they're going to win, but now they're laying 29 against the Vols, and we're not 100% sure Tua's playing.
Yeah, that's a game I would stay away from because, you know, if Tua – now, Tua, I thought, said in his post-game press conference that he felt better at this point this week than he did last week, which would lead me to believe to say he's playing the game, but – then again, you never know what's going to happen at the quarterback position. And if he does play, I mean, do you take a chance? You got LSU in 2 weeks. So how long do you let him play in this particular game? Do you want him to re-aggravate it? I personally would completely stay away from the game. I mean, it's a 28.5 point favorite. I don't like laying 28.5. I don't like going against Alabama on the road because Bama travels less people on the road. So it's not like they can go deeper into the bench like you can at home. And the spread's usually a little bit lighter on the road than it is at home. So it's easier for them to cover as an away favorite, I think, than it is as a home favorite for those reasons. So I personally would just watch the game and see how it plays out.
That's a fascinating, fascinating analysis there. So you're saying Bama doesn't take as many guys on the road as they do, so that when the quote-unquote scrubs play, I mean, it's Bama reserves, that you're more inclined to have talent, you're more likely to have talent on the field because they don't go as deep on the road.
Yeah, you're only down to maybe the top of your third string as opposed to at home when you can even get to your walk-ons going because you can't travel everybody.
Well, first halves are not posted yet. They do that about Thursday evening, if I'm not mistaken, or Thursday early evening. But what do I do here? It's a gravy train. I've been backing all season, 7-0 against the number in the first half. Where do we go with this?
Let me give you a little handicapping history here, Doug. I'm going to take you way back. I think it was, what was the year the Bears were so good this with the Super Bowl
85.
Shuffle? 85. Okay, so it's about mid-year. I played the New England Patriots. I won 4 times with the Patriots right off the bat, and they kept covering against the spread. Each week, I just kept playing them. Take the Patriots. Take the Patriots. They get to the playoffs. They're playing the Miami Dolphins. And back then, the Patriots were sort of an iffy team. This is the Miami Dolphins. And the line was like 3. Why was it 3? Because the Patriots were on such a hot streak. Guess what? I played the Patriots again. They won. Then they played the Oakland Raiders. And you're like, okay. And once again, the spread was off. I mean, they weren't. I wasn't getting enough. Still played them. They won again. Took it all the way to the Super Bowl. Played the Patriots against the Bears. Got killed. But you know what? I think I went 12-1. So you can, when you play on a streak, you win many times. You only lose once. My advice, play your streak.
That is great advice. One correction there, Phil.
Okay.
85, it was the L.A. Raiders. And why do I know that? Because I was there. I was at that game, a very sad youngster, looking at my dad saying, I thought we were supposed to win. What happened? You know, you hear that they're the better team. They're at home. You just assume the game's over, right? You don't know better.
And the spread, you figure the spread would be like 7. But it was only like 3 in the game because the Patriots had just been covering every week, and there's people that were just going to the window taking money off the Patriots every single week. So
it was really painful.
Yeah, I can imagine. Speaking of painful, I grew up in Cleveland, okay?
All right. I got nothing on you there. No, look, it is a great point. I guess I think I've been getting ahead of the curve, let's call it, on Thursday when these first half lines get posted because – you know they're going to steam up. I saw the Westgate opened at 19.5 when the market was at 18. They were certainly ahead of the curve, and it got to 19.5 eventually on Saturday. I guess the thing is you can't bet it because you don't know about Tua. But if Tua's suiting up and you get that alert, I think you got to go in on first half, wouldn't you say?
Well, you know, there's another thing that I really like, and I call it the quarterback injury system. And it's when a big-time quarterback is not playing, 3 things happen. Number 1, the line moves. Number two, the rest of the team says, hey, we're not just about that quarterback. We're a team. You know, we can play without them, and they give an extra effort, and the opponent lets down a little bit. So you had all those three things together. I think if they announce Tua is not playing, you're going to get a cheaper line, and I think Bama's first string will be out there and go on a mission. So I would still play Bama in the first half.
Well, it depends what the adjustment is. You can say that, like, with Brock Osweiler last weekend with the Dolphins, although the Bears should have won and covered, you know, would have, could have, should have. I understand that.
Right.
But I think Tua is that much better, and I've seen what Hurts does on offense, and it's very limiting. It would just depend what the line would change to. I see the logic there, but, I mean, Tua is just that much better than Hurts, in my opinion. But can we just go ahead?
I think he's going to play.
Yeah, I do too. Can we just recap how the first half did not go over last week? It landed 40. First half was 40.5. I gave that out on air. I went 2-1 because of that instead of 3-0. But you got the receiver pulling up. I mean, they kicked like a million field goals, and they had first and goal on the 4 and somehow didn't punch it in. I don't understand how that game did not go over in the first half.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Bama-Ole Miss game. How did that not go over? And, yeah, I understand. At the end of the half, you're probably thinking, I've got this, and up, didn't work.
Now, both were losing with a couple minutes to go, so it took Bama to complete a long pass and all that. Now, that typically happens with Bama, but you're in serious danger. Grave danger? Is there any other kind? Grave danger. 0-2 at that point. So with that being said, I think I should just be happy. Let's talk about a couple of the high-profile games. Clemson and NC State, a couple of ACC unbeatens, but the odds makers are not stupid. They know one team is much better than the other. 17.5, the Tigers. So you got an undefeated team at 5-0, catching 17.5. What are your thoughts here?
You know, sometimes when you get a team like Clemson, you may look past certain opponents, especially mid-year, and maybe not give your full focus. But there are three reasons for Clemson to give their full focus here. First of all, last week's attrition by the top 10 teams. Four of them going down and three others fighting for survival in the game. I think that will have caught Clemson's attention. Second, they're fresh off a bye week. So this is a team that's at home in Death Valley. They haven't been at home for a game since the end of September. Now here we are towards the end of October. So it's been almost a full month since they played a home game. They're going to be anxious to get out there. And then the third is NC State's record. I mean, we're talking about an undefeated team rolling in here. Your challenger in the ACC. I believe they're going to get Clemson's A game this week, and that's always on the scary side. With NC State, you know, I watched them against Marshall. That was sort of an even game. NC State got a late interception return for a touchdown. Marshall had the ball down 10 and was driving. But I thought that Marshall played them fairly tight in that game. The Virginia game, they did win comfortably. And then Boston College was just a tale of two halves. They dominated the first half, but at the end of the game, 28-23, and BC had a couple of opportunities. Last year, I liked NC State in this game a lot because I thought we had two defensive lines that were basically equal. NC State was at home, and NC State gave them everything they wanted, only lost by 7. This year, the defensive lines are not equal. While NC State has been playing well, those four guys they had started last year are all in the NFL. Clemson's four guys who would be in the NFL are all back. I think that's a nice advantage they have, and Trevor Lawrence getting more comfortable each and every game. So I think the situation definitely favors Clemson in this one. And I wouldn't go against Clemson in Death Valley with too many teams, and I'm not going to here. I'll take Clemson minus 17.5.
Yeah, one thing we always talk about is the spot. The spot usually is you want to fade those high-ranked teams laying double digits, but you're right. NC State will have their attention. To another Death Valley, LSU wins outright as an underdog. Coach O delivers like he has been throughout his career as a dog. He's hosting another dog, Bulldogs, coming in. So Mississippi State at LSU. Tigers have been great this year as an underdog, but as a favorite, they've covered just once. Here they're laying 6.5.
Yeah, and, you know, the situation is great for Mississippi State in this one. First of all, if you watch last year's game, Mississippi State did control it at the line of scrimmage, which was surprising to me. I actually leaned with LSU in that game last year, and then Mississippi State just ran the ball down their throat. And that's something I'm sure I have LSU motivated. But in the same token, LSU is, I mean, they just went into Florida, played a big game, went down to the wire. Then they home in Death Valley as an underdog to Georgia, big game. Now it's a third straight big game. And Mississippi State's fresh off a bye, and they gained a lot of confidence because against a very good Auburn defense, An Auburn defense had been giving up like 3 yards per carry. They gashed them for 6.1 yards per carry. Were able to run the football on them. Both teams this year have lost to Florida, and both teams this year have beaten Auburn. And if you look at the difference, Mississippi State against those two foes, 3.5 points per game. LSU minus 3.5 points per game. So I think the two teams are fairly close here. It is at night in Death Valley. LSU's playing with a lot of confidence. And I think LSU's the better team, but I think the situation favors Mississippi State. I was hoping that the number would be double digits. I would take Mississippi State. And if the number was 3, I would take LSU, but they put the number right where I had it, which is right about 7. So I personally will probably stay away from it, but I think it'll be a really good game.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to see how much LSU has left in the tank. You mentioned the win at the Swamp and some other big wins and games this
year.
Lost at the Swamp. But just some big atmosphere, like last week's game, you know, brought it all. And then here, I mean, it's a night game at Death Valley. It's going to be curious to see when this team runs out of steam, if at all. Could be this weekend, but again, that line seems about right. Another ranked matchup, the third for this weekend, is where game day is. Pac-12 country finally going to Wazoo. Should be an electric atmosphere. I always get a kick out of those early games, right? It's so early. It's 6 a.m. out there in the West Coast, and I've been out there when game day radio traveled at UCLA and some other places in the past. Seattle, that was the venue we were at for the Washington-USC game a couple years ago. But here's Oregon, which I've been really impressed. I thought they were not dead, but just going to be really hard to pick themselves up off the mat after blowing that game at home to Stanford. But hats off to the Ducks. They've bounced back 5-1 now following a win over Washington, but now they got to take the Cougs in Pullman.
Yeah, and it's interesting when they were off that overtime game against Stanford, the very next week they were traveling to face California, which was fresh off a bye. So you thought the situation was huge in California's favor. Yet the Ducks handled it. They won the game 42-24 on the road. Love the way Justin Herbert's playing this year, 17-5 ratio. I do think he's the probably the number one overall pick in the draft. You know how quarterbacks get elevated at the end. I know Bose is up there and Oliver's up there, but Justin Herbert is physical specimen. I mean, he can run, he's big, he's got everything you want in a quarterback. I think Herbert will be possibly the number one pick in the draft, and he's playing like it for the most part. As you mentioned, they dominated Stanford. Last week, you know, Washington misses that field goal at the end of the regulation. We got a whole different story on Oregon if that field goal goes through. You got a two-loss team that's going nowhere, but here they are now. They control their own destiny. Both teams actually control their own destiny if they win out. They win their division and get to the Pac-12 title game, and both still have a shot at making the playoffs. I think that Oregon's a better football team, but the situation with Washington State off a bye is huge, game day being on hand. Love the way they waved the Washington State flag at all those game days for all these years, and now they finally get to host one at home. And how about Gardner Minshew, the East Carolina transfer? He was sort of playing in obscurity for years, and now hit 69% with a 19-4 ratio. I would take the points in this one because I feel Oregon's a better football team, but, I tell you what, Pullman, Washington's a very tough place to play in. Remember, they beat USC on a Friday night last year. This will be an even bigger environment than it was for that.
No, I'm excited for that one. It's going to be a good Apple Cup this year as well. One other game I skipped over, and I apologize, it's another ranked matchup. Very interesting because both teams almost would be ripe for a flat spot, but it's a rivalry game. And actually, today, we're taping this on Wednesday, October 17th is the 3-year anniversary of that strange loss by the Wolverines punting, and the Sparty blocked it and returned it. Just improbable win. So here's a ranked matchup in East Lansing. Wolverines laying a touchdown on the road against their rivals.
Yeah, and, you know, ever since Mike Hart uttered those comments about the little brother, this series has just been dominated by Michigan State. I think they're perfect against the spread. They've dropped a couple of games straight up. And so they'll be fired up for it. But, you know, if I'm Harbaugh, I'm in the locker room. I'm like, you know what? I've heard enough about this little brother stuff. Who's the little brother anyway? They've kicked your for all these years. Now go out and do something about it. And I just think Michigan's got more horses this year. You know, you look at them defensively, they're holding opponents to 211 yards per game below their season average. That's the best mark in the country. Michigan State's got a good defense, but it's about number 28 in my rankings, number 70, holding up on 74 yards per game below their season average. And while they had the nation's best rush defense hitting in the last week, Penn State ran the ball for 205 yards on them. I think the way Michigan's running the football with Higdon and Wilson and Evans, that they can run the football on Michigan State, even though the Spartans have been pretty tough there. Michigan is going to be just as fired up as the home dog will be for this one. Shea Patterson playing pretty well. And I had big expectations for Brian Lewerke this year. Last year, remember, Lewerke had 20 touchdowns, just 7 interceptions. He ran the ball for 582 yards. How about just 83 yards rushing midseason? And he's only got an 8-7 ratio. So I think Michigan's quarterback playing better. Their defense definitely better. I just think Michigan's a better football team. And the last time they came here to Spartan Stadium, they were a massive favorite. In fact, I think the spread was close to 3 touchdowns in the game. Michigan State did get a late score in that one to make the final 32-23. They scored a touchdown with 20 seconds to go in the game or something like that. So Michigan is able to handle this atmosphere and win on the road in Spartan Stadium. I like the Wolverines in this one.
I like that handicap, and I like that motivational channeling your inner Jim Harbaugh speak. So I'm fired up. I'm banging on the lockers right now. I'm ready to go out there and hit someone.
I know I would be. That's for sure.
Well, this is my reaction.
I'm going 12 for 12 this weekend, and that includes the Monday night parlay.
You've motivated me. You've motivated me to go out there and pick a bunch of winners and run the table.
Awesome, Doug. And but you know what? If you go 2-1, you've had yourself a great week as well.
Well, I'm going to certainly be monitoring the Tua status, because I even said it on air. I'm like, I'm not about to get off this gravy train. I mean, I'm getting to that point. It's just insane. And at some point, you would think it's going to lose, but you mentioned that the Patriots run in the mid-80s. Like, you're only going to be wrong once, but you can be wrong a bunch of times if you try to go against it. We'll see what happens with Tua. But it is look, they've been saying it on SportsCenter when they introduced me. I look at him like, guys, do you know anything about gambling? Don't jinx me here. But it happens 2-1 every time. We'll see. But thank you for the insight and analysis, and obviously great stuff throughout all of our platforms, and we'll look forward to your piece with the Bear and Stanford Steve on ESPN.com.
All right, sounds great, Doug. Always great talking to you, and as always, good luck this weekend, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That is Phil Steele. Go follow him on Twitter as well. A lot of good stuff, and he has a posting with Stanford Steve and Chris Felica, the Bear, on ESPN.com, where they do a bunch of picks on chalk. Obviously, the Stanford Steve and the Bear have their podcast. Go download that as well. John Murray's going to join me momentarily, but first, a word from one of our sponsors. These days, you can get practically everything on demand, like our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. Did you know that you can even get postage on demand? All you need is Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the services of the post office right from your desk. Buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package. All available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you're done. Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale. You can weigh your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage every time. Right now, use BETS, B-E-T-S, for this special offer. 4-week trial includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in BETS. Again, that's B-E-T-S. Stamps.com. Enter BETS.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Wow. Because it fits, because he's fresh off an executives meeting. Murray, you're climbing the charts. I hope you can fit us into your busy schedule.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt that I was the least important person in that room, but I got through it. I faked my way through another meeting, Doug.
Yeah, did you any Penske file issues or anything along those lines?
No, nothing that exciting. Just a little recap of the weekend. Probably some of the same things I'm about to share with you guys.
Did you leave any briefcases in there with a tape recorder to make sure that they didn't talk about you when you left the room?
Which, for some reason, was contained a running tape recorder. I think the M&M should be you. No running tape recorder. Just a very quick meeting. We just recapped the weekend. We had our best college football Saturday of the season this past Saturday.
Oh, good. I'm happy to hear that. So explain to us, and I think I know where you're going to go with this. We're going to talk Michigan, Wisconsin, but why was it such a successful weekend?
Well, we just won every decision. I mean, every big decision just went our way is the simplest way to put it. I mean, some highlights, Michigan-Wisconsin was a highlight, like you just mentioned. Central Florida-Memphis, that game was really good for us. Memphis covered as a dog there. LSU beat Georgia outright. That was one of the more heavily bet games. Iowa State, unfortunately for me, beat the West Virginia Mountaineers. Just all the big decisions seemed to go our way on Saturday.
Well, we've talked about it a bunch on the pod, and I know it's something you and I always get a chuckle about, is the public backing the square underdog, basically. And they were all about Wisconsin, more than a touchdown here. And we saw some reverse line movement, something I discussed on SportsCenter and wrote about in the column. And it fascinates me because I'm a nerd with this stuff, but it really is rare that you see a line move up when so much money is on the underdog.
Well, there was a lot of sharp money early in the week on Michigan, laying 7.5, laying 8.5. I don't think it actually got all the way to 10 until Friday. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the public was definitely all about the Badgers, fading my guy Jim Harbaugh in that spot. And, you know, that game, I think the final score was a little bit misleading. I don't think it was quite that one-sided. I think Michigan was the right side. But I think that game was a little bit closer than the final score indicates. And there was that big penalty on Wisconsin for roughing the long snapper, Michigan's long snapper, Cheeseman, which continued a Michigan drive where they were punting. Michigan ended up scoring a touchdown on that drive, and they kind of blew the game open from there. But even though I was rooting for Michigan, I thought that was a pretty questionable call.
I want to talk more about your guy, Jim Harbaugh, because you've been on this train about Michigan not being done yet, given all their potential quality wins remaining on the schedule and losing at Notre Dame in the opener. Certainly not going to disqualify them. We've learned that from the first handful of years of the college football playoff. One-loss teams, especially an early loss, does not prohibit you from reaching the college football playoff.
No, and if they win out, which would include a win over Ohio State in Columbus the last weekend of the year, they'd have to win the Big Ten championship game, obviously. But if they win out and they finish the year 12-1 and their one loss is at Notre Dame on the first week of the season, I definitely think they'll get into the college football playoff. And after they lost that Notre Dame game opening week, I said on the show, like, the sky's not falling if you're a Michigan fan. Michigan's fine, and they've done a good job of regrouping, but they've got their really tough game still to come, especially that Ohio State game.
Yeah, after losing at Notre Dame, they've covered 4 of 6, so kind of bounced back the rest of the way. I mean, one time they didn't cover as 37-point favorite, so nothing to be embarrassed about. Northwestern game was the one hairy game, though. They almost lost that game.
They escaped the Northwestern game. You know, the Big Ten is tough sledding, but they really escaped that Northwestern game.
It's all relative. I don't think we're going to call at Northwestern tough sledding if you want to consider yourself a championship team.
You know what I think is the toughest conference to go undefeated in? The Big 12. Because in the Big 12, you don't get any breaks in the schedule from year to year. You play every other team. And you don't get to play, like, there's no stronger division versus weaker division. Whereas, like, in the SEC, the West winner gets to play the East winner. Or a better example, the Big 10. The Big 10 East winner gets kind of a layup against the Big 10 West winner. If you go through the Big 12 and you finish first, guess what? You just have to play the number 2 team in the Big 12. So there's no – I really think the Big 12, I don't want to say they're doing themselves a disservice, but they're making it hard for a Big 12 team to get to the college football playoff because you don't get any breaks in the schedule and you just end up playing the number 2 team in the conference championship game. Very difficult to go through the Big 12 with an undefeated record.
And I will say, all those teams with all those offenses, you really can't have an off week because a team like Baylor, a team like Iowa State will beat you because of some of the blame is your own defense, but the other teams who quote-unquote stink in the conference at least could put up some points if need be.
Absolutely. I think outside of Kansas, any of these teams is capable of winning on any given Saturday. And you also have 9 conference games in the Big 12, which is the same as the Pac-12, but the other conferences have 8. So that's another thing. Instead of having another layup non-conference game like some of the SEC and Big Ten schools do, the Big 12, you got to play 9 conference opponents and then the conference championship game. It's very difficult to get out of the Big 12 undefeated, and that's why I'd say there's a good chance we will not see a Big 12 team in the college football playoff this season, especially if Notre Dame goes undefeated.
I 100% agree with you. What sharp action have you obtained this week so far?
Sure, I've seen some pretty good stuff. Speaking of Kansas, I know I just made fun of them, but we did have a sharp group take the Jayhawks plus 20.5. They're at Lubbock this weekend, play Texas Tech. North Carolina plus 10 on the road in Syracuse. Sharp group took that one. This one's not for the faint of heart, Doug. Purdue plus 14 at home against the Ohio State Buckeyes. How do you feel about that one?
I don't know, man. I thought the over was good for Ohio State last week. It did not get there because I think they're just so explosive. But their defenses are not – excuse me, defenses, plural. Their defense is not that impressive. I mean, it still sticks in the back of my head that they gave up 31 week one to Oregon State. Now, they covered a 40-point spread still. But
yeah.
This is – now, without Bosa, obviously, this is going to be an interesting team to monitor and – I got no opinion on that Purdue game. We had Phil Steele earlier on the podcast. He likes North Carolina as well, just given that he had him last week, too, against Virginia Tech. UNC early in the year had suspensions and injuries. This is a much different team than maybe the analytics would suggest.
Yeah, the group that took North Carolina is a group I really respect. And just to go back to the Purdue game, Ohio State's defense, you lose a guy that's potentially the first overall pick in the draft in Nick Bosa. You're going to have a big drop-off defensively when you lose an impact player like that. Ohio State's defense has looked very vulnerable, though. I agree with you. And Purdue, they're sort of riding the ship.
Yeah.
Brohm's a coach I really like a lot, and I was very surprised by how disappointing they started the year. But it seems like they are riding the ship just in time. That should be a good game. How about this one? Rutgers plus 21 at home against Northwestern. It's one of the early Big Ten kickoffs here, 9 a.m. local time in Las Vegas.
I mean, Rutgers is, you know, we talk about it with the Patriots, like, do you feel less dumb when you back them, blah, blah, blah. I think it's totally at the other end of the spectrum. I mean, if you're going to put your taxed income on Rutgers, I mean, with all those games on the slate, I mean, what are you doing, right? But every ticket cash is the same. You just have to have the right spot to back the team from New Jersey.
We've got the famed duffel bag boy. Ooh. I'm sure you've heard about him. He loves to go against Rutgers. That's like his favorite team to fade. So I'll be curious to see. He hasn't been through here this week. I'll be curious to see if he comes in and he lays the points with Northwestern. But that's definitely been his MO. He's faded Rutgers numerous times this season.
I'm a little disappointed that Duffel Bag Boy caught on. Because, first
yeah,
of all,
oh,
He doesn't bring a duffel bag.
No, and he's not a boy.
Well, I kind of like the boy component. I actually kind of like that because he's not a boy, right? Like,
right.
So he doesn't bring a duffel bag. I like Jimmy Vaccaro's nickname of Nutball University.
Nutball University is much better than Duffel Bag Boy. I'll tell you, Duffel Bag Boy. It makes no sense. It's not, but it's really caught on, and people they want updates from me all week on the Duffel Bag Boy, and I try to share what I can. He was on Army this past week. Army beat San Jose State 52-3. So the duffel bag boy got us pretty good on that one.
So he collectively won, according to reports, a couple hundred grand on this game, right? Making up for a lot of his losses earlier in the year?
Yeah, he had 30,000 here at the Westgate Superbook. I can't speak to any other property, but I saw on social media that there are reports of him making wagers across the state. If it's true what he bet, then it felt like it was about $250,000 in total that he had on Army. But my understanding is that he played back some NFL games on Sunday that didn't go his way.
Okay. Again, I was just asking you to reference the article that we've collectively read.
No problem.
Yeah, I think we're going to lose that fight of changing the nickname. I think Paulie, I got to take it up with him for trying to cement that home.
I made a joke about how bad the nickname was one time. I was on with Mitch and Paul. I love Mitch Moss and Paulie Howard, by the way. And Mitch got so defensive. He's never snapped at me like that before. But he's like, you're going to the well too much. It's Duffel Bag Boy. I was like, hey, Mitch, all right, man, whatever. Just a silly nickname. What do I care? let me give you two more that I've seen some sharp action on. Virginia plus 7.5. They're on the road at Duke in an ACC battle, and Cal laying 6.5 on the road against Oregon State. You know, here at the Westgate, we really need a couple more wins out of Oregon State. Our biggest decision in the win total market we had a gentleman made a very large bet on Oregon State under 2.5 wins. They blew a game earlier this year against Nevada. We could really use two W's out of them, and I don't know how we're going to get them.
So they beat the Thunderbirds of Southern Utah. That was their win. They did lose to Nevada on the road by two. So the sharp play is what, I'm sorry?
Cal. Sharp group laid Cal minus the 6.5.
Oh, gosh.
Now that line's up to 7 on the Golden Bears.
So you got the Beavers off a bye. It'd be hard to only take 7, even at home against Cal.
Yeah, Oregon State's a tough team to back. I can't. I like that Virginia play. Virginia plus 7.5 at Duke. I like that pick. And I like that North Carolina pick. I've seen a few different groups on the Tar Heels. It's down to 9.5 now, but they were taking 10 on North Carolina earlier in the week. They're at the Carrier Dome to take on Eric Dungy and the Syracuse Orange.
Yeah, we talked about it with Phil Steele. The only thing I'd say is that Syracuse team's really built for the Dome. They have some speed there. I mean, they're going to play a lot better, obviously, at home than on the road. But that Pitt loss, first of all, they should have won, covered in regulation, went to OT. But that does scare me a little bit. It scares me a little bit.
I'm a big fan of Dino Babers, Syracuse coach. I think if you look at what's happened to Bowling Green since he left, I mean, that's such a mark of a really good coach. That Bowling Green program has just fallen apart since he left. I think that says a lot about the coaching job he does. How about this one? I think one of the more interesting lines of the week, Mississippi State plus 6.5 at LSU. LSU only laying 6.5 at home in Death Valley on a Saturday night. It's a tough spot for LSU, coming off of that emotional win against Georgia. LSU has just played a brutal schedule this year.
Yeah, that's another game we talked about with Phil. He thought the line was pretty spot on. I mean, Tigers, as we've discussed, are money as an underdog. They're almost like the Tom Herman of the SEC as Coach O.
Yeah, I was very anti-Coach O before the year, and I picked against him almost every week, and I finally decided I'm done. There comes a point for
enough
every
body
man,
blows.
Doug. Every man has to have that point where they just go, you know what, I was wrong about that. And Coach O, after the very thorough beatdown of Georgia on Saturday, I'm done. I apologize. Carry on, Coach O. Congratulations, LSU fans. They've had a tremendous season so far. Their schedule has been so hard. They played Miami on a neutral field. They played at Auburn. They played at Florida. They played Georgia. They still got to play Alabama. I thought the schedule was just so hard. I thought them under wins was a great bet, and I was wrong.
You mentioned the Alabama game. Now, you guys have taken down your advanced lines, but some other shops across the world and in Vegas do offer them, just a couple others. But what we got about a 2-touchdown favorite, 15 points maybe, for Bama-LSU.
I don't know if it'll be quite that high. I would make it a little bit lower than that. I know that game's in Death Valley, but Alabama, the lines are like hard to make because this is the highest power rated team I've ever seen, and I've been in the business since 2007. This is the highest power rated college football team I've seen, Doug. But the one thing I will say about Alabama, I'll give you one negative. It's not their fault, of course, but they haven't really played anybody yet, so it's kind of hard to tell just how great they are because all their tough games are on the back end of their schedule.
I would agree, and some teams have been able to move the ball. I think Arkansas comes to mind. Now, look, no one's perfect all the time. Their defense is still very good. But we're trying to project how they would fare against a quality opponent, and those are things you look for.
And we've seen some money come in. Not a lot of money, but we saw a little bit of money come in. Take Tennessee plus 29.5. That line's now 29. I thought that line was going to be a little bit higher, to be honest with you, but Tennessee is coming off of a very good win on Saturday on the road at Auburn. And I know Alabama-Tennessee is a pretty big rivalry, the third Saturday in October. So that should be a good game. But I got a feeling we're going to need the Volunteers.
Yeah, that game came up with Phil, and I've since texted with Ed. So this is fascinating because he said he would move the line only 2 points if Tua is ruled out, from 29 to 27. He said that's because the game line already factors in partial play of Tua because – he doesn't play at the end. Now, if the line was like 5, obviously it wouldn't move to 3. It'd be a quality opponent in the drop-off and quarterback. It's about those big spreads only moving because of the backdoor cover, and that's what's happened with Bam, although they did cover the big spread last week in the game. But he said the first half line would move 4 points from 21 to 17. So he's saying he's starting to put on a serious tax on Bam in the first half. And you know that disappoints me because I've been on this gravy train. They're 7-0 against the number in the first half this year. But he's saying 21.
They're already?
No, they're not.
They're already?
They get posted Thursday
on the Bama first half?
Well,
no. I'm just saying, don't you think there's already attacks on the Bama first? I mean, 19.5 last week.
But for a 20, so what would normally be the line at 28.5 game line? What would be the first half line?
I would think more like 17.5, 18. Certainly not 21.
Okay, so what did it get to? I thought it got to 19.5.
We closed 19.5.
Okay,
they were up by 20 at halftime, so we got dinged once again on that one.
So do you think that's a sufficient tax from what 17 to 19.5? Do you think that's sufficient in a first half line, given that
I think that's a lot. And I mean, I know that they were very fortunate to cover that first half against Arkansas 2 weeks ago.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
They needed a little bit to go their way, the Missouri cover this past week.
I don't know, man. They kicked a bunch of field goals.
I'm really focusing more on the Arkansas one. I thought that was a very fortunate cover if you had Alabama first half in that game.
100% agree. That they should not have covered. They got a gift on the goal line, and a fumble that was overturned, so they maintained possession at midfield. I just think it gets a little interesting, and I'll tell you this why. Now, last week, of course, I jinxed it because I was texting buddies, and of course, they had a field goal fest in the first half. But before last week, Tua had 26 touchdown drives in the first half and only one field goal drive, and that was a drive that ended with a field goal only because it was at the gun of the first half. So,
they're converting all
those third downs and whatnot, but of course, this drive, they don't. Now it stays under, but they still cover. So I would say the Missouri, but even then, I'm fascinated because I don't know the answer. And Ed said it's going to be 21 because he has to tax it more because it's not basketball where obviously points are in 1s, 2s, and 3s. It's so hard to make a first half line because of the offense and the touchdowns are 6/7 points.
Did Ed tell you about the first drive on Saturday, the first Alabama offensive possession? What happened?
A long touchdown.
I happened to be walking through the room and he was sitting back there and he asked me if I'd go over or under 5.5 plays until Alabama's touchdown. And I said, are you kidding me? Under? And I said, under all day. And he, before he could get done calling me an idiot, they threw a long touchdown on the second play of the drive.
Yeah, it was.
So I told him, nice line on that one, Ed.
I think they've had 3 or 4 touchdowns in the first half, or excuse me, 3 or 4 touchdowns, like within 35 seconds. So, like,
you
basically
know,
first play touchdowns.
It's hard. Doug, it is hard to set their lines for these marquee games that we know are down the road, because we haven't seen them have to play for 60 minutes yet. I mean, we don't really know what they're capable of. We haven't seen them actually be challenged all the way through a full game, the way that they will be when they play, let's say, Georgia in the SEC championship game or somebody like Ohio State or Clemson in the college football playoff. It's you really don't even know how good they are yet because they've never been pushed.
And to your point, on the flip side, we're seeing some other teams maybe not be that good. Like, we've all think Georgia's is a good team, right? We keep saying that's going to be Alabama's only test. Right. No, and I was agreeing with you. Like, a lot of us were saying that. But here it is. Maybe LSU's their biggest test considering the game's at Death Valley.
I thought Georgia was the second best team in the country before last Saturday, and certainly I don't look good for that call. A very impressive win for LSU. Yeah, you can make a case that at LSU might be the toughest game on Alabama's schedule. I think Auburn, I know they've had a very disappointing year, but you know Auburn's going to throw the kitchen sink out of
them. No, I disagree. It's in Tuscaloosa.
I don't think so.
No.
I'm trying to make a case for somebody to beat Alabama. It's hard.
It's definitely LSU. That game at Death Valley will be its toughest game, no doubt, until maybe the playoff. But I'm not convinced there's anyone in the playoff that can give them a tough game because Saban will have a month to prepare, and that means every player, particularly that defense that's so young now, will have a month of practice under their belt.
No, it's true. And we've seen Saban with an extra month to prepare. Alabama last year against Clemson was one of the sharper sides I saw in college football last season. All the wise guys run Alabama in that national semifinal, and the public was all over Clemson, and we saw what happened in that game.
And yeah, and that's what I brought up about this Michigan-Wisconsin game. The last time I think, now it may have happened, I just don't recall, the last time there was a reverse line movement to the favorite was Alabama-Clemson. Michigan-Wisconsin, right? And
That Alabama-Clemson game really was one of the bigger sharp square splits I've seen in college football in my time out here. Every sharp group we had was taking the Tide, and the ticket count in the public was just all over Clemson. I had a pretty good idea what was going to happen in that game.
Yeah, that was almost free money when you get that kind of information. Yeah, all right, man.
That was a good one.
Any other
we
college
get those
plays?
Every week, DK. I wish we got one of those every week.
I know, right?
Unfortunately. No, not really. I mean, I think I gave you most of the highlights. I've seen a little bit of money come in on Clemson. Nothing major on that game. Washington State, there's a game where we've seen a little bit of money come in on the favorite. I don't know if that was setting up the market, though. We saw some guys laying Washington State. They've pushed that number. That game opened pick 'em. And right now, the Cougars are a 3-point favorite at home against Oregon.
Let's talk more about that. Setting up the market, it's called a head fake. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, we'll get that a lot early in the week. Guys will play a side, move the market to where they want it, and then come back in over the top on the real side. And that I think that's what that Washington State bet was, but I don't know that for sure. The only people that could really answer that are the groups that are the ones moving these numbers. But it looked like a head fake to me, the Washington State bet. We'll find out on Saturday.
So the thought process is if you have influence in the lines, you will set out sort of a dummy bet, and the market will move, maybe overcompensate, and then closer to the weekend when you have higher limits, that all books offer higher limits later in the week as opposed to initially in the week, then you can come over the top. And it's almost like buying a couple points for only 10%.
And, you know, sometimes when I do these shows, like we're taping this show on a Wednesday morning, sometimes the sharp plays that I'm giving out, they might be the head fake plays. I mean, I do my very best to give everybody what I think is the real sharp side. But even I've been fooled sometimes this year, Doug.
Impossible. Impossible, Murray.
Oh, yeah. No, there's been a few. I know one that really sticks out, Houston, Texas Tech. We saw the head fake come on Houston early in the week. The real side was definitely Texas Tech. All the Texas Tech money came in late that week.
Weird game for Texas Tech last week. It was like the first game in like 20 years they won without scoring 20 points. Just bizarre that TCU continued to shoot itself in the foot a week ago.
Yeah, we've seen that line's really come down this week, the Texas Tech game. We had the group that I respect took 20.5 on the Jayhawks. That number's down to 18.5 right now. I do think Kansas is the correct side in that game.
Oh, gosh.
We shall see, sir. I don't know. Kansas is a tough team to back. I gave out Kansas plus 29, I think, on the road against West Virginia 2 weeks ago. And that was a very easy cover because West Virginia turned the ball over in the end zone twice in the first half of that game.
A lot of ugly dogs this week from the Sharps on this podcast. We'll see how they materialize. But
yeah, there are some tough, like Rutgers and Kansas, those are tough teams. When you have this whole board in front of you, those are tough teams to say, I'm going to put my money there.
All right, man, so good college football talk coming up straight ahead. We'll talk a little NBA and baseball postseason. All right, Murray, we don't have to do the open again, but I don't have to make you sit through that, but I will give you a little taste.
On your mother's house or not, with my mother in it.
We had to do a little two for the money because of this
great two for the money reference.
NBA trend that is just remarkable. I was hammering it home. Brian Windhorst mentioned it on the podcast a week ago that I did the NBA season win totals. Teams that travel to China in the preseason come back and just don't have anything in the tank for their season opener. Following Boston's cover, so Sixers went to China, did not cover the opener. Yeah. Now 1-8 in the season opener after traveling to China since 2014.
Can we talk a little bit about that Sixers-Celtics game?
I would love to.
For one thing, I saw a bunch of highlights from that game. I mean, for one thing, how did Boston win by that much? Kyrie Irving had an absolutely terrible game. And Boston still won going away.
Turnovers, man. Philly was just gassed. I texted you during the game. This has blowout all over it, written all over it.
That was a good call. And then, let me just say this, though. I think it was Jaylen Brown challenged Joel Embiid at the rim. Joel Embiid blocked him. The ball just happened to deflect into the basket.
Yeah, with both hands, too. It was a two-hand stuff.
Yeah, let's not go too. And then Jason Tatum, wildly out of control, dribbling like a maniac, throws up a shot. And it banks in, and he starts talking trash. I mean, come on. I played a lot of pickup basketball in my younger years. If you accidentally bank a shot in, you don't start talking trash on your way back down the court.
I completely agree. I thought it was strange that the broadcast team was even talking about this. Like, dude, he got rejected. In volleyball, if you get a two-handed swat, that's a roof. And
He's just so lucky that it ricocheted. If it ricocheted even off the backboard and hit the side of the rim and went out and for a long carom, it's called a block. The fact that it rattled home is not a feather in the cap of Jaylen Brown.
Absolutely
I thought
not.
Embiid
he
did
got
a
blocked.
Very nice job. And look, I think this Sixers team has some warts. I talked with Jeff Sherman last week, who obviously knows NBA great, and he was saying that, you know, I said I love the Celtics a week ago, and this he's like, well, I can't lay five. I'm like, why? This team's so much better. I think I found a flaw in the Westgate handicapping. I think they love the Sixers a little too much.
Well, you know, Ed Sammons is a big 76ers fan. Although, you know, we won quite a bit of money on their win total last season, Doug.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Ed booked it very aggressively. But I know what you're saying, and I love Ben Simmons. I think Ben Simmons is going to be this huge NBA superstar. But right now, you're looking at these two teams. Boston just has incredible depth,
yes.
And they've got Brad Stevens pushing all the buttons. So, yeah, Boston, clearly the favorite to come out of the Eastern Conference and lose to the Warriors in the NBA Finals next summer.
Well, I want to talk more about that. I think the Warriors are not a shoo-in.
Well, you're going to have to talk me into that. I'd love to hear your case for that.
I think the Celtics are pretty darn good, man. I think they're really good, and I think they have the best coach in the NBA. And so I think if you factor in the Celtics...
I think they have the best coach in the NBA, too. So I'll give you that.
Let's not sleep on the Rockets. Now, I'm not saying the Warriors shouldn't be favored. I'm just saying, and this was a great line on Twitter last night. Hey, I know someone wrote... I forget who it is because I want to give them a shout-out. But it was like, look, I know the Warriors are going to win it all, but must we give them the championship rings before the season?
Yeah. No, I don't think we've ever seen a team where... Or at least I haven't in my time in the business seen a team before the season that was such a foregone conclusion to win a title. I'll be the first to admit, I don't think there's any way that the Warriors don't win the title. I think they're just head and shoulders above everybody else.
See, when they got Durant, I thought that was a shoe-in. But now that I saw Houston, I mean, look, Houston had him on the ropes. Now, I know AI got hurt early in the series, but look, Houston was there, and who knows what happens with Chris Paul injury. I know.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Chris Paul doesn't get hurt. That game seven, that was a game seven in Houston. With a healthy Chris Paul, that could have been a different result. So I agree with you on that.
And I think the Celtics are loaded. They have start now. Look, I think there's something, barring injuries. We know there's always the injury variable, but I think the Warriors. Look, anything can happen. No, that's such a cliche. I think it would take a perfect storm, but the Rockets and Celtics, I would say, are championship contenders as well.
And it took a perfect storm to beat them in 2016. Even obviously, that was before Kevin Durant. But what you got was the one-game suspension to Draymond Green, LeBron James just being who he is, and then Kyrie Irving playing at such a high level for those last few games, and Golden State really choking in the last few minutes of Game 7 at home. It takes a perfect storm, like you said, to knock a team like this off. But they didn't have Kevin Durant that year.
Right. No,
I don't think it's possible. Somebody can go out there and prove me wrong, but I don't think it's possible.
I mean, the Warriors start, is it Damian Jones? Jordan Bell?
Yeah.
Jarebko? Like Kevon
Looney? I don't think it matters who starts for them.
I don't know. AI's old. I don't know if there's – I love Livingston. I just don't think they're as deep as they used to be. I think they're thin.
They're probably not as deep. I agree. The teams they had in 15 and 16 probably had more depth. Obviously, they didn't have Kevin Durant. But they were a little bit deeper back then. I remember in that 15 finals, Golden State's – backup backcourt was Barbosa and Livingston, and those guys were way better than Cleveland's starters. I think Cleveland was starting, I think, Dellavedova and Iman Shumpert.
Well, that was right? When Kyrie got hurt.
I think the Warriors had more depth back then.
If teams are allowed to muck it up and Curry doesn't get the whistles that he should as a two-time MVP and superstar, there are ways to disrupt this team. And look, I'm not saying they shouldn't be the favorite. I'm not saying there are a bunch of teams that can beat them. I would say Boston and Houston have more than a puncher's chance, although I do think the Rockets are going to take a step back this year, so who knows.
I agree with that. Well, they have to. They almost have to take a step back from the success they had last season. And you know I don't like Carmelo Anthony. I don't know why they would want him.
Well, we'll see. If he's just in the spot-up shooting role off the bench, I'm okay with it, although he is a defensive liability.
A big-time liability, and I don't believe that he's capable of staying within their offense and doing the things they want. He loves those long step-back two-pointers, Doug.
Well, maybe he's going to change now that he's with Houston. Those aren't allowed. Remember, in the preseason, there was that highlight he made one and ran back to the bench. Like, tapping his chest, saying, my fault for making it
Nobody
long
should
two.
Be, no one should be shooting long two-pointers. Houston's absolutely right about that.
Real quick, how was the handle last night, opening night?
It was good. It was good. Good cover for us. Oklahoma City covering against Golden State in the second game. First game we took a little bit of a loss on, but nothing drastic, and it was a good handle for us. You know, this is the time of year where all four of the major sports converge. So we've got a ton going on. We had a Golden Knights home game last year. We had baseball playoffs, football this weekend. We got a million things going on.
Yeah, we had LeBron and the Lakers Thursday night, so we'll keep an eye on that handle and those lines because such interest, obviously, in the Vegas market, which is a Laker town. Real quickly, baseball, anything of note there with the playoffs and the betting results?
Sure, I can give you this. We're sitting in great position on the Dodgers, the Brewers, and the Red Sox. We don't want to see the Astros win the World Series.
Ooh, so you could take a hit on the team that was the favorite entering these last four, if you will, this championship series.
Not much of a hit, but we do lose on them. But our guys did an excellent job managing the baseball future book. Three of the four teams were in a very good position on. One team we take a loss, but nothing too substantial.
All right, man. Well, thanks for fitting us in. I know you have those executive meetings. Just a heads up. Don't bring up the jerk store. Don't tell somebody you did anything with their wife, you know. Just lay low. Don't channel your Costanza.
Don't try to cram all the shrimp into my mouth either. Let's see how many I can fit into my mouth. Okay. I'll keep that in mind next time I'm up in the boardroom.
Are you going to call anyone Coco or T-Bone?
No. I just sit there, man. Again, I'm not quite on their level yet, so I shouldn't be handing out nicknames just yet.
All right. Good stuff, man. All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow for some NFL chat.
All right, buddy.
All right. Take care. That's John Murray of the Westgate Superbook. He is a director and odds maker. Thanks to him and thanks to Phil Steele for joining us. A lot of interesting perspective. And just another reminder, we still have the NBA season win totals podcast. That's up on the stream. Go download that. A lot of good NBA analysis. Gave out some winners too. We had the Celtics on opening night. Also first quarter, Sixers under. That hit. So a lot of good stuff there. Brian Windhorst, Preston Johnson. Don't forget Windhorst also has an NBA podcast, The Hoop Collective. Thanks again for downloading. The Bear and Stanford Steve have their own umbrella. Check that out. And we'll see you back here on the Behind the Bets tomorrow on Thursday for the NFL podcast.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.